is Passy with a Z. Welcome to Joy on Paper, a program for writers and those who dream of writing, and for everyone who wants to know the story behind the book. Coming to you from glorious Clearwater, Florida, the perfect place for writers to write and readers to enjoy a good book. And for all of you out there, if you're preparing for the hurricane, please be safe. We went through it last year, and we're hoping that we don't get it here in our Clearwater area, but be safe, everybody, and be careful. Well, I am so happy today. Everybody knows, I was at BoucherCon a few weeks ago, which was held here in St. Petersburg. It was a wonderful event, and we had mystery writers from all over the world who were there, and I had such a wonderful time meeting everybody. And one of the people I met, it just turned out to be so perfect. Sometimes just little miracles happen where you meet somebody that you know you're really going to like and really enjoy knowing. And that's what happened with me. I walked into this big ballroom and there were a couple hundred people there, I think. And then I saw one face and I said, I have to sit with this woman. And her name is Kathy Ace. And I was so happy to connect with her and then to discover that there's so many things I like about her. Hi, Kathy.
Hello, Patsy. What a lovely introduction. You're a joy to meet as well.
Well, thank you. First, I didn't know where you were from or anything. I just walked straight up to you, straight up to the table where you were sitting and sat down because I thought you were beaming so happily. And I thought, boy, this is what BoucherCon is about. Mystery writers who are happy to be there and happy to talk about their books.
Well, you know what the truth of it is for all of us writers? Without readers, we're just talking to ourselves. So thank you for being a reader.
Oh, I'm a reader. I'm a big reader. And I tell you, one of the things that you mentioned there, of course, you have a new book coming out in January, and it's called The Wrong Boy. But I wasn't about to wait to have you on the program. I'll have you back in January. But I wanted, so you gave me one book, and I read it, and it's called The Corpse with the Ruby Lips. And I was so impressed with it. And then I had to go on because this is one of your series. And then you have a second series that I just fell in love with. And it's just so amazing. So let's talk about, which series do you want to talk about first?
Well, I tell you what, the book that I gave you when we met, The Corpse with the Ruby Lips, is actually book number 8 in the first series of books that I ever wrote, the Kate Morgan Mysteries. So we can begin with her, if you like. You've met Kate and you've met Bud Anderson now in that book. But, of course, her story and Bud's story began 8 books earlier than that, and some short stories earlier than that, and some novellas earlier than that. So she's getting a bit long in the tooth, is Kate.
Well, isn't it fun? And I do love... I love mysteries where there's a husband and wife team. I enjoy the dynamics of it. And this is they're really cute. And so let's talk a little bit about Kate and about Bud.
Well, you know what? For those people who've never met Kate Morgan, and for those people who've never met me, the first thing I'd better say is probably what they're detecting at the moment is a Welsh accent. I'm from Wales, raised in Wales, but I at the age of 40, I hopped over to live in Canada, and I now live on the west coast of Canada. And like me, Kate Morgan is a Welsh woman who, in her later years, moved to Canada. They say, write what you know. So I thought when I began writing, I would start with someone a little similar to me. I'm not going to say we're the same, because if you read Kate, you might realize she's got some fairly acid internal thoughts, and perish the thought I would ever think like that about people. But Kate Morgan, yes, she's started life as a university professor. She's short, she loves her food, she's Welsh, she's grappling with a new country and a new location. But with Kate, meeting Bud changed her life in many ways for her. She's got a bit of a messy background in that she escaped the United Kingdom having been arrested on suspicion of killing an ex-boyfriend, which is never a good thing.
Yeah.
And of course, the newspapers being what they are, they think there's no smoke without fire. And if a professor of criminal psychology is arrested on suspicion of murder, the tabloids are never going to let go. So Kate thought that hopping over to Canada might actually give her a chance of a fresh start. And that's exactly where we meet Kate in the first book, The Corpse with the Silver Tongue. And the titles of the books refer to the person who is dead in my books, either on the first or the second page. I don't like to mess about. I just like to kill them off straight away.
That's a good idea.
There are no spoilers, really. And Kate, being a professor of criminal psychology, you can't really call her an amateur sleuth because she brings her professional knowledge to bear on all of the cases she encounters. But what she does, like myself, is she travels a great deal. So each of the Kate Morgan mysteries is set in a different country. So for people who enjoy armchair traveling, they enjoy learning history about art or architecture, the local cultures of the countries that she visits, and from Kate's point of view, let's be honest, the local food and drink. They will enjoy very Agatha Christie-style mysteries. I mean, they're contemporary, they're set in the modern day, but I think I grew up reading Agatha Christie, and when I started to write, I enjoyed that shape of book as a reader, so I wanted to create that shape of book as a writer, where everybody could have done it, nobody could have done it. Everybody wanted to do it, nobody wanted to do it. The closed circle of suspects, from within, Kate has to deduce who had the opportunity, who had, particularly in her case, the motive. And they're quite motive-driven books.
They are. And as I said, when I started reading it, this one, I was like, oh, wow, I found a new friend here that I just want to know more about her. And I want to mention to everyone that Kate is spelt, it's a Welsh way, right?
Yes, it is. It's a shortening of the name Caitlin. C-A-I-T is how she's referred to, Kate, C-A-I-T. And in fact, she was probably named in honor of Dylan Thomas's wife. Dylan Thomas is a world-famous poet from Swansea, which is where I am from, and which is where, funnily enough, Kate is from. So it's not unusual for female babies to be named Caitlin in honor of Dylan Thomas's wife.
Well, actually, Caitlin is quite a popular name in country western communities. So the shortened version, Kate, I really like that.
Yes, yeah, it's a snappy name. And Morgan, of course, is a good solid Welsh name.
And as a matter of fact, you spell your name, Kathy, with a C, which isn't as popular today. Most girls have a K, but I like the C. And as a matter of fact, I was going to say that your autograph is very, how can I say? It's like a super autograph. It's like, whoa, you're the super crime writer. I thought that's a great signature.
I've practiced it for years. I mean, the interest, a lot of people do ask me, is Ace your real name? Because Ace, you know, Kathy Ace, it's a good name for an author.
Oh, perfect.
And it is, in fact, my birth name. And surprisingly enough, you might think Ace is an unusual name, but if you were to look in the Swansea telephone directory, you'd actually find a lot of Aces. It's quite a a frequently occurring name in Swansea and the southwest coast of Wales.
Well, it's like one of the easiest names in Wales because so many other names are so difficult.
Well, it's a good one to sign, and I enjoy doing it.
I was so impressed with your signature. I thought, oh, I like that. Now,
I should add, that's not how I sign my checks, just in case anybody's wondering.
Okay, well, that's good to know. But the bank is watching. Anybody who sends in a check with that, that's funny. Now, you know, I've been to Wales a number of times. I had some business there, so I was there quite often, and I could never really get my tongue around Welsh names, but it's such a beautiful place, and I think that your second series really talks a lot about Wales. So,
it does.
I just want to mention to everybody, the wonderful thing, isn't it, just great about the internet is that people can start at the beginning of a series.
Yes.
So they can
yes.
go and with the Kate Morgan series, they can go right to the beginning and go all the way through 8 books. And what countries do you go through with Kate Morgan?
I'll run them off in order. There's the south of France around the Nice area. There's British Columbia's wine country. The research for that was really tough. Pacific coastal Mexico near Bucerias. Then we go to Vegas, baby. That's a real fun one. That's the book that won the Boney Blythe Award for the best Canadian light mystery, even though it's set in Vegas. And I really enjoyed writing that one. Again, the research was onerous.
The things that authors will do for...
I know. We just give ourselves up to our art, you know? After that one, Kate goes off on a wonderful Hawaiian cruise. So she's on a cruise ship, which has visited Hawaii. Then, after that, the fifth book, she goes to a castle in Wales. I did actually take Kate and Bud to Wales. I wanted them to visit Wales, and they had quite an interesting time there. Then they were on a Hawaiian cruise. Then they go off to Amsterdam, where they have quite an interesting time. And the eighth book is set in Budapest. And all of those places are places where I've either lived or have worked for some time, or I've spent so long there that, you know, I'm not talking about a 2-week vacation. I'm talking about months and months and months, all told, being in a particular place. I like to write about places I really know. But Kate being an outsider, I also like to deal with the tension that comes between the people who've lived and grown up in a certain place and it's really in their bones. They've made it what it is. The people who are the incomers, they might have been there for 20 years, but they're still incomers. The people who come to live in a place because they think it's wonderful and then immediately try and change it. And the people who come and visit just for a short time. And Kate's always one of those people. So she's able to look at a place and those tensions like an outsider and able to analyze them as the psychologist that she is. And I find that tension really does bring quite a lot of opportunities for, let's just say, the odd dead body and leave it at that.
Well, the lovely thing, these are really like travelogues, you know. It's a new genre. Travelogue, with a little bit of murder along the way, because you write so beautifully, and with this one with about Budapest, it was so wonderful because your descriptions are great. You put in the, as you said, you like to talk about the history and of course the food, and I love books that talk about food too. So it's just they're delightful.
Yeah. I know they're very popular books with book clubs, for example, because we all know, if we belong to a book club, how nice it is to have a food and drink themed night.
Exactly.
So if you're reading a book from a certain part of the world, you can all bring the food and drink from that part of the world and really indulge.
Well,
of course, having read the book beforehand.
Exactly. Well, I'm going to recommend this to one of the book clubs that we have here, a library book club, because they love to do that. And I will make the goulash, because I spent a lot of time in Vienna, so I know good goulash.
And my mouth's watering.
I don't think it has to be one of the really pure joys of life to be there.
Velvety,
and it's cold,
warming,
you're cold, warming. You come in from the cold and into a restaurant, and you sit down and they give you this bowl of goulash that is so, there's nothing like it.
No, that the glistening surface of it, it just invites you in, doesn't it? And whether you go in with a spoon or a great big hunk of bread, each one is just as satisfying as the other. I have my mouth watering now. I do.
I know. Well, when I as soon as we get cool weather here in Florida, which will be at the rate we're going, because it's 90 degrees every day, but as soon as we do, then that's when the goulash comes out, because I love that flavor, and the cold weather combination is just perfect.
It is, isn't it? And you know, that's the interesting thing about food. What you were saying about the Wise Inquiries Agency mysteries all being set in Wales, I've tried to introduce some Welsh foods into those books, But when it comes to cuisines of the world, the Welsh are not terribly well known for it. You mentioned goulash as being very well known and associated with a certain part of the world. The Welsh don't seem to have a particular cuisine, although come the cold weather, we do have our own lamb soup. It's called cawl, C-A-W-L. And when it comes to cold days, that lamb stew bubbling away on top of the cooker, oh, now that's my idea of autumn days and winter days. Yum.
Well, yes, and it's better than the Scottish getting haggis, so...
Oh, I'm not going there. I am not having that conversation. I used to have a cottage up in the southwest of Scotland, and you used to be able to go to the chip shop and buy haggis and chips, and it was like a deep-fried, sausage-shaped piece of haggis, all deep-fried in batter with your chips, because why wouldn't you fry haggis?
That's right. Why not? If you can fry a Twinkie, you can fry haggis.
Yes, and Mars bars. Yeah, you can fry anything. You can even fry butter, apparently.
I guess so. But the wonderful thing about, just about the second series, we're going to talk about why the Wise Inquiry Agency, is that, well, I just love it. One of the, when I was young, when I was 21 years old, I bought a house, a cottage in Sonning in England. Just outside of Henley, because I was obsessed with Jane Austen and I wanted to live near where Jane Austen grew up. So I spent a lot of time in England, many years there. And as I said, I traveled all over to Wales, to Scotland, to, you know, all over. And so one of my favorite authors is Dorothy Sayers.
Yeah.
And of course, in Dorothy Sayers, the, you know, Peter Wimsey's mother, the Dowager Duchess, is one of the best characters in all of crime fiction, I think.
Adorable, yes.
Absolutely. And you have created a wonderful series here. Tell us about this series.
With absolute pleasure. Well, as I said, I was writing the Kate Morgan mysteries, and when I reached the book in that series where Kate went to Wales, I was writing that book set in Wales, and I thought, oh, I'm having so much fun visiting Wales again in my head. I'd really like to come back to some characters I'd first introduced in a collection of short stories. And the Wise Inquiries Agency novels came from that short story, that novella, and they came into their own. Now, I'd better explain. This series features four professional female private investigators. They're not sleuths. This is actually their business. One is Welsh, one is Irish, one is Scottish, one is English. W-I-S-E, hence the name Wise. They're all from different backgrounds. And in Britain, as you will know, the place you come from very much tells people what you are like and what's to be expected of you. There's a concept of social mobility, but it doesn't exist in real life.
Oh, no, it doesn't. It doesn't matter. It doesn't matter. You can make a fortune. You can make, you can
makes
be the,
no difference.
And it doesn't matter. They know exactly where you're from.
Exactly. Especially as soon as you open your mouth.
Oh, yes.
But the thing about these four women working together is that they're from very different backgrounds, very different social classes. And because they are so different, what keeps them together and what holds them together is their need to know and their ability to find out the truth. Now, being private investigators, however, Kate Morgan as a sleuth can trip over a corpse and can sleuth her way through a murder mystery. That's perfectly acceptable. But if you're a professional private investigator, you don't get to investigate murders because the police investigate murders. So what we find with the Wise Inquiries Agency ladies is they tend to start with small problems which snowball into rather larger problems where certainly life is in danger and sometimes is lost. And I like the idea of having several cases within a book that are being dealt with, and sometimes they all come together or sometimes they remain as separate strands and are solved in their own right. But the thing that holds these women together is their camaraderie in fellowship and in professionalism. And with you mentioning the Dowager Duchess, I have to say the first of those books introduced the Dotty Dowager, Althea Twist, and her wonderful son, Henry Devereux Twist, the 18th Duke of Chellingworth. And he asks the women to come and investigate the fact that he believes Mum is losing her marbles. And that's how they come to meet Althea. And she does remain a presence with the team thereafter. So to me, she's a very dear character. And she herself is a quarter Welsh, a quarter Irish, a quarter Scottish, a quarter English. So she's the perfect addendum to the four women. She's an addition rather than a change. She shifts the dynamic somewhat. And the friendship that grows between the women through professionalism, I really wanted to celebrate that on the page, because women do work together terribly well as a team, which is not to denigrate the role that men play in the books, nor in real life. But I think it's great to see women who are different, who differ from each other, working as a team and acknowledging their similarities, but also the strengths and weaknesses that each of them possess, so that they can do a better job as a whole than they ever could do on their own.
Well, these women, the four plus the Dowager, are again, have, for me, I bring up Lord Peter Wimsey, and of course he used women to do some his investigations. And so they are just a wonderful group, and they're so diverse. And, you know, one is a nurse and one is a aristocrat, and then there's one, which one is it? Annie, who can go undercover. And,
oh, yes.
And of course, I think that was really great to, you know, have Carol, who has a baby. So you have everything in there to make an interesting dynamic and a fascinating story. And you mentioned men, and I wanted to go back just for 1 minute to Kate's husband, Bud, because I really like Bud.
Oh, good. So does Kate.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
Well, that's the wonderful thing. As I said, I do love a couple fiction. And so I thought the Kate and Bud relationship is great. And in the Wise Agency books, I think also, as you mentioned, it's Henry, right? Henry Twist.
Yeah.
And a twist spelt with a Y. It's just very, it's just delightful.
Yes, poor old Henry. He was the second son of a duke and was never expected to become a duke. But unfortunately, his older brother contracted measles when he was visiting the USA, and died. So Henry was called back from the wonderful life he was living as a fairly layabout artist type, and was expected to step up and become the duke with very short notice. So it's not the life he ever envisaged for himself. And bless his heart, he does find the upkeep of Chellingworth Hall something of a bind. And, of course, his mum, not having been born to the nobility, has a bit of a... She's got a streak in her which comes from being a bit of a street fighter. And she's a bit of a cheeky girl, despite the fact she's facing 80. She's going on 15 sometime.
Definitely cheeky. Well, you are, Kathy Ace, I think you are absolutely delightful yourself. As I said, I was so impressed with you when I met you at BoucherCon. You gave us all such lovely gifts, and I was just so thrilled with meeting
you. Now, have you tried any of the Welsh recipes on that tea towel?
Not yet. I'm waiting for a little cool weather, and I'll get to work on it. But I do think that you're a fantastic writer, and so everybody can go to your website, which is
www.kathyace.com, CathyAce.
Easy to remember. And it's really a nice website. You have all your books up there, and people could read more about you, and they can start the series. Now the new book is coming out in January.
It is, yes. And I'm very excited about it. I just got my first blurb, actually, today. It just came in on email today. Jane Corrie's a wonderful best-selling Sunday Times bestseller. And her blurb is, "A clever plot with a web of intrigue and characters who stay with you." It's a dark story set in South Wales in a village on a cliff top where a pile of bones is found and nobody knows who they belong to.
Okay, that's intriguing. Now, we're going to book you for January. You'll be here.
Thank you.
You'll be here to talk about it. And meanwhile, everyone should go to your website and also check you online wherever books are sold, because they will enjoy your books. And Kathy, I want to thank you so much for being on Joy on Paper today.
Thank you. It's been a joy to be on Joy on Paper.
Okay. I'll talk to you in January. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Okay. That's nice. Okay. We'll take a commercial break and then we'll be back.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
Are you an author, an artist, an inventor? Then you need to protect your valuable intellectual property. You need Larson & Larson. We have the experience and knowledge to help you with all of your legal needs, from processing trademark, copyright, or patent applications, to negotiating licensing agreements and handling litigation. The attorneys at Larson & Larson in Largo, Florida, can help protect you. Call us today for a no-cost consultation at 727-546-0660 or visit our website at larsonpatentlaw.com.
WTAN Radio is proud to announce that local author and speaker Glenn Erickson will soon be a guest on Pat Z's Joy on Paper program. He will tell you how he got his start and how you too can become an accomplished writer, author, and speaker. Glenn Erickson has published self-help books as well as speculative fiction stories and novels. All of his books are available on smashwords.com and barnesandnoble.com.
Hello, I'm Mike Lindell, the inventor of MyPillow. And like all of you out there, I had problems sleeping. Pillows would go flat. I would flip-flop all night long. I would wake up with a sore neck, maybe a headache, or feel like I needed a nap even though I slept 8 hours. When I invented MyPillow, I wanted it to where you could move the patented fill to give you the exact support you need as an individual, regardless of sleep position. MyPillow will get you into that deep sleep faster, and you will stay there longer. It's not about how much time we spend in bed. It's about how much of that quality sleep we get. I do all of my own manufacturing right here in the United States. I have a 10-year warranty. You can wash and dry MyPillow, and I give you a 60-day money-back guarantee, so you have nothing to lose. And here's my best offer ever.
MyPillow is now offering 50% off their 4-pack special.
Support Joy on Paper and local authors. Go to MyPillow.com and use promo code PATSY, P-A-T-Z-I, or call 1-800-871-1543. That's 800-871-1543.
How many of you listening today yearn to write stories, poems, or novels? Each of you has a story to tell, or knows of a story that others would love to read if only you could put the words on a page. The many writers' clubs in the Bay Area understand this urge and would welcome any new writer to learn with them. So go ahead and take the first step to becoming a well-known author. Sponsored by the Pinellas Writers Club.
This is the Tantalk Radio Network.
With a Z, and I am back, and in a few minutes I'm going to be talking to my next guest. She has a new book that just came out, Merritt Weisenberg. But before that, I just want to remind everyone that Tasha Alexander is going to be a guest on October 30th, and her new book is called Uneasy Lies, The Crown, and again, it's a wonderful book from her, and I hope that you'll mark your calendars for this interview, because it's going to be lots of fun. Tasha is Lee Child's sister-in-law, and I met her at BoucherCon, and it was just wonderful to talk to her. And so I'm really thrilled that she's going to be joining us here on Joy on Paper. But right now I want to turn to my next guest, and I some reason I get a kick out of her name. Merit Weisenberg. I like that. Hi. Are you there?
Hi. How are you?
Hi, Merit. Well, I like that name. I like the name Merit. I thought that's just...
Well, it's funny. It's a product. I have a Norwegian mother, and then my dad is from New York, and yeah, so they kind of split the name in half.
I don't know. I just get a kick out of it. It's a nice name for a writer because it's easy to remember, and there aren't that many Merits out there, and so I think it's perfect.
Thank you.
Wow. Well, you know, I was thinking about you all morning this, you know, I like when YA novels come out and I get them and I particularly when in this new book, which is called Select Few. The first book was called Select, and now we have Select Few. And it's an ongoing story, so I'll let you tell everybody about it. But one of the things I want people to, you know, YA fiction is very important because we want to get young people reading at a young age and get them really enthusiastic about reading and making it a lifelong joy of their lives. So when somebody, you know, really concentrates on that genre, I think it's very important, and I just love to support people who are authors who are doing that.
Yes, I when I decided to become a writer, that was I love YA, even though I am not a young adult anymore. It's really fun to write, especially if you like writing about first love.
It is. There's something special about it, and now in your case, of course, writing about young love is also writing about a little bit of a strange family dynamics and an interesting concept that you developed here. Do you want to tell us about it?
Sure. So the series starts, it's about a large group of highly evolved people who hide in plain sight, and they're at the end of their time in Austin, Texas, when the leader's misfit daughter, she uses her abilities in public. So from there, she's punishment, she's separated from the other kids, and she's sent to a different school where, really, in spite of herself, she develops dangerous feelings for an outsider and really slowly begins to question everything she thought she knew about herself and the world in general and her family. So if book one is about Julia, 17-year-old Julia, coming to terms with the differences between herself and her family and making some tough choices. And the sequel is about Julia, what the mystery of who she really actually is and what that means to the fate of her family.
And, of course, you have the FBI involved.
Yes.
which is always interesting to get the FBI involved.
Yes. So I thought about I've always been interested in really subtle powers, like strange things you can't explain, when you think of a song and then it comes on the radio 1 second later, or you think of a friend and then the phone rings and it's them. And so when I was coming up with the idea, I really thought about, I wanted that very strange, kind of plausible powers. And I thought about, well, what if you actually had a whole group of these people? And then things got really interesting. I started thinking about, okay, well, they would obviously, if they had that edge, they'd be able to probably amass a lot of wealth. They'd be very, a threat to the powers that be. They would have built-in mechanisms in place to get away. But at the same time, they're still human and they're a part of this world. And they would, especially the younger kids, they'd be curious about other people. So once I started playing with that, the FBI, they're very scared of that. And so that came to my second book.
Well, we always need conflict. And so I thought that was a smart thing to introduce.
Yeah. And I actually talked to an FBI agent. It was really fun to kind of go through it with him. And he played along, which was awesome.
Now, Now, so Select was the first book, and the second book is called Select Few. And what's happening in Select Few?
Select Few, you find Julia is now, she has taken herself out of her family, and well, they've gone into, they have gone, escaped, basically. And she knows she never wants to hear from them again, and she's protecting her boyfriend, her love.
And Julia's people are called what?
They are called the Puri, the Chachapuri, who they kind of evolved in years and years and years before. They lived in isolation in Peru, and they were discovered by miners, and so they fled. And so that was, you know, many decades before. So Julia is a product of these very special people who've been on the run. So so Julia's boyfriend, she's trying to protect him, and there's two things. She's worried that actually she might be able to influence him, and he will develop some of these same abilities, which will put him on the radar for her family, who might come back for him because they're desperately looking for more people because they're running out of options for keeping their group alive. This is the last generation, and all of the kids are about 17 years old. That's the youngest. So so Julia needs to protect him, and because of that, the two need to separate. So the first book is about those two coming together, really in spite of Julia, and the second book is pulling them apart and also seeing if their, you know, infatuation can become, actually develop into something that's really love. And the second book between those two is really about trust.
Well, this is the type of book that I think appeals to younger readers. It sort of juxtaposes paranormal abilities with adolescent love and adventure, and so I think it's a really great book for young adults.
Yeah, I was talking to one of my friends who's a teacher, and she said that she really appreciates series because her kids they've already invested in the first book. And they, you know, so they're really willing to go into the second book. And so I never thought about that. So the series are really a way to go with young readers.
Yes, they do. They like to carry it on. They want, they get, it's like with all of us. If you find a particular cozy mystery series that you like, I mean, you never get tired of reading them because you know the characters, and you want to know what they're going to do next. And I think so you plan to continue this series. I think from reading the ending, I think there's more to come.
Not at the moment.
No?
Actually, we kind of planned it as a duology.
Yeah.
I left some danglers in there.
There's some danglers case. There, and I'm thinking there's another book.
I know. Well, it's funny because the character that I think about the most is Angus, who is Julia, the main character's. It's not exactly a love triangle, but a bit, and the two are more best friends. But he is kind of a reformed bad boy, and he for me is the easiest character to write. And I still think about him, and I kind of wonder, you know, where he wants to go next and what he wants to do. So
yeah, well, I like him too, and I love the name Angus. It's a memorable name, and I thought we could learn more about him.
I know, and yeah, he fits his name, and he just was born one day. It was great.
Now, so obviously you've been having fun with this. Isn't it wonderful when characters come into your head and you just, they just take over and you can just run with them?
That is the best part, because as you probably know, it's not always that easy. And so when you do have a character, I think that's the magic, when these really unexplainable things happen. And that's exactly, you know, on frustrating days, I remind myself that's why I do this, because you sometimes get these people, these fully formed people in your life that appear, and they are kind of leading you. And it happens rarely, but when it happens, it's so special.
Well, you come from a background where you were in the television business, right?
Yes, film and TV. So I worked as a development executive. So I worked for writers and directors. And then before I moved, I worked at Disney. And so I was responsible for finding stories, for production, shaping them, giving lots of notes. So kind of like in publishing the editor's job, but I was doing that in film and TV. So I did that for a lot of years, and it was funny. It was, looking back, I think I've always wanted to be a writer, but I wasn't writing for a long time, and it was my way of getting very close to writers and to stories. And I think, too, what spoiled me was I got to see actual working writers, people who were doing this as their job.
And seeing how much fun it is to write. Once you start seeing your words on paper and know that you can write a book, that's an exciting time.
It is, and it's very addictive, strangely. I mean, I still cannot get over how if you just sit down and every day you work, all of a sudden, I mean, it takes, you know, several months, but you have a book. It's still crazy to me. It's like putting a penny in a jar, and one day it's full. And so I have not a lot of discipline about anything else, but I think it's like a marathon runner. You know, they're addicted to that, and I'm addicted a little bit to that daily watching the progression.
Well, today's the release date for Select Few, and it's just wonderful that, you know, it's always so exciting when a book comes out. Of course, there's a lot of work that goes into then promoting, and I'm sure that you have a nice schedule for promoting your book. What do you have a website that you want people to go to?
I do. It's just my name. It's maritweisenberg.com, and then I'm most active on also Mara Weisenberg.
Oh, you're an Instagram person?
Yes. I think as especially young adult authors, I think that is the place.
You're right.
Important.
Yeah, they're not on Facebook anymore. They are on Instagram.
I know. That's just for the older people.
I know, yeah. That's great. Just when I'm getting used to Facebook, they now want Instagram, and I'm saying, okay, I don't know about that. I can't do everything. My goodness, I can't.
I know.
It's so hard to do everything.
I had great advice. It was just focus on two things. So that's what I'm trying to do.
So are you working on the third book?
I am. Yeah, it's very different for me. It's no fantasy. It's just a straight up contemporary YA novel, and it's about two insomniacs on a cul-de-sac. So that's what I'm busy working on.
Okay, that sounds intriguing. Well, I think you know, it's just really, it's one of the joys of life. Really, is to have all the sometimes you are just amazed with all the characters that are in your head and that start coming out. You know, you're thinking, okay, well, I'm not just one person. I'm like, I got a dozen people in my head.
I know, and what I find with every book is that it becomes this very strange amalgamation of my current obsessions. So yeah, I think, you know, I have so many different influences in each book. So, and it's a lot of just things that are catching my eye at that moment, and somehow they find their way in there. So I love that too. I think each book kind of becomes a diary of that time and place in my life.
And the nice thing with YA is that you can influence young people to think about other people, to think about doing good, to think about you know, some of the problems in life and how they can face them. So being a sort of into that the genre is I think very, very compelling and very rewarding.
I think so, too. And I think I was at a conference where they talked about how, you know, why novelists are in a unique position of really becoming empathy peddlers right now. So I like to think of that as, you know, and I think this series is a lot about empathy. It's about people who are trying to separate themselves away from the world and be stuck in their assumptions about other people. And it's kind of about responsibility of being part of this world and what you gain from that. So, you know, I think it is, I think authors have that, are in a nice position to kind of talk to young people.
Well, I think you've done a great job with the new book, and I think that, you know, I wish you the best success with it, and I hope that when you're touring around with and meeting young people, that, you know, you can influence them to just, you know, I get so many books on bullying, and I get so many books from memoirs from people who were bullied in high school. And it's so tragic. You know, I just got a book from, she's in her 70s. And she is still suffering from being bullied as a 11-year-old. Just being called names and being called stupid or fat.
It's so prevalent. And I have two daughters, you know, and I just, you know, it really, big and small, you see it. It's around. And it really affects people. So
we hope that this generation of writers who are trying to reach the young adults will get across to them that, you know, you grow up and you don't want to have all this behind you. You know, you don't want to sort of have to carry this with you, whether you are the bullied person or the bully, because the bullies also have guilt, you know, 20 years, 40 years later.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Definitely.
So if you can address them at that age, you know, 14, 15, 16, if you can say, look at what a joy life can be, how wonderful people can be if they just try.
Yes, and you're not alone, because everywhere you go, there's going to be hope. There's going to be, you know, that person that just tries to push your buttons, and you get through it. And, you know, I think as teenagers, you just feel so alone no matter who you are. So I think that's the joy of young adult fiction, is that you realize you are not alone. There's a shared experience out there that people don't necessarily talk about.
Well, that's what I got from Select Few. I got this feeling that you want kids to look at the possibilities of goodness.
Yes, there's hope. And also, you can move into a new era in your life. You know, you really feel like you're going to be stuck forever. And then all of a sudden, things move, things shift. And we're kind of right when you've given up sometimes.
Well, I think you did a great job with this book. And again, thank you so much for joining me today on Joy on Paper. I've really enjoyed it, and I will have you back when the next book comes out, because it always takes a little bit of time, but it's a wonderful process, and I'm so glad that you are such an enthusiastic author.
Oh, thank you. Thank you so much for having me, Patsy.
Okay. Bye-bye now.
Bye.
Okay. Whoa. Two great authors. And as I said, with the first author that I talked to, Kathy Ace, I met her at BoucherCon, and it was really wonderful. And I have now so many authors who were at BoucherCon, and I want to thank all of them who have been sending me books. I have been getting books and books and books, and I think I'm now up to like 70 books from BoucherCon. And I just have to find time to read, and it looks like if the hurricane stays here in our sort of in our area, we're going to have bad weather. So I will be sitting around the house and reading, which is something I do when I'm not working on Facebook. Which, by the way, if you are on Facebook, go to my Facebook page, Radio Joy on Paper, and like me, because I like you. And it's strange, I'm meeting some really interesting people on Facebook. I didn't expect that. So it's really nice, and I get some really great messages. So please just do that. And then, of course, I will be putting up, I've put up a lot of the interviews that I've had recently on my webpage, which is radio-joyonpaper. That's the webpage. I will be putting up the interviews today, and I'm also going to be doing some more feature interviews with people like Lee Child and Ian Rankin and some others. And so I just want to tell you that one of the things that I so enjoy is having this ability to share the past interviews with you. And all you have to do is go to my website and you can click on to most of them. They're coming up. It's a process to get everything done, but I'm trying as fast as I can. Again, I want to thank Glenn Erickson for his wonderful support for Joy on Paper. He's going to be on the program on October 16th, along with Bria Burton, who is one of the local, she is a star in our community with sci-fi, her sci-fi fiction. And so she's going to be joining Glenn on that day, and we're going to have lots of fun talking about sci-fi, which reminds me, I just did, just for fun, I wanted to try, I did a YouTube version of the interview with Mark LaPorta, and I think it turned out very well. So if you want to have a look at that, check my Facebook page for a link to Mark LaPorta's interview, because, again, it's sci-fi, and I do love sci-fi, so I'm getting more and more involved in sci-fi, and that's called The Probability Shadow, and that's by Mark LaPorta. And again, I want to remind everyone that several things are coming up. Go to Reader's, go to Writer's Digest. Go to Writer's Digest and check out the contests that they have. They have some contests coming up. One has a deadline of October 15th. You might still have time if you qualify. Also, the Writer's Magazine has some very interesting competitions coming up. And you have to try. You have to enter these contests. But, of course, as I said, only enter the ones with the, you want to enter ones that are real. There are a lot of contests out there that are not real because they are not from one of the top organizations. Writer's Digest is a fantastic competition because all of the readers are New York agents and editors, so do that. Anyway, as I said, one of the joys of life is to see your words on paper or to hear them spoken. My throat is going, which is just as good that I'm just about out of voice. I've been talking a lot. Anyway, have a wonderful, wonderful day. Say something nice to somebody today. I will say something nice to Big Ed in the control room. Thank you, Ed, for everything. And he's saluting me, and I'm saluting him. And I am out of here today. We'll be right back.